This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, we're talking about road safety and how to improve that in Malaysia.
So the global plan for road safety was just launched by the WHO and United Nations. So we start off by looking at what it contains and how we can apply it here. And then what will it take for Malaysian drivers to change our ways?
So we want to know, what is your biggest gripe about Malaysian drivers? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and so today, as mentioned, we are talking about road safety, specifically because the UN General Assembly resolution had declared a decade of action for road safety from 2021 to 2030, with the target of reducing road traffic deaths and injuries by at least 50% during that period. Quite ambitious, and that is where the global plan for road safety enters the picture.
So just an overview of what that plan includes. The UN calls on all parties, specifically the government, the private sector, funders, UN agencies and civil society, to participate in this plan. And the objectives are to introduce or enforce safe road infrastructure, safe road use, safe vehicles, multimodal transport and land use planning, as well as a post-crash response.
So, and if we look at why this might be useful in Malaysia, right, just to give a picture of where we're at, we recorded almost 5 million accident cases in the last decade, with the number of road accidents increasing by over 150,000 cases from 2010 to 2019. And the Federal Traffic Investigation and Enforcement Department reported that throughout the COVID-19 ops, which ran from March 18th last year till October 13th this year, there were a total of 566,760 accidents, and over 5,000 of those were fatal. And I think looking at the causes of it is also quite interesting, because between January and September this year, 692 fatal accidents were actually caused by skidding, followed by careless exit or entry of junctions at 410, and then other causes, which I'm sure covers a wide gamut, at 742.
I think why that's interesting is because when we look at things like skidding or even making a careless choice to enter or exit junctions, isn't something that is completely out of the norm. I mean, I think that if we look at people around us and the way they drive, and possibly even if you examine the way you drive yourself, you're often likely to have done some of those things or driven in such a way that would have caused those things to happen. And I think that's why it comes back to this idea of having a comprehensive way in which to address why road safety is such a challenge. And it needs to happen at all levels, right? Because on the one hand, you have the infrastructure itself. But on the other hand, you have things like user education, impressing upon people why it's so important to always value safety over that thing that seems to push people, which is, I just need to get somewhere as quickly as possible.
That, but you know what I was thinking of looking at skidding is, what about car maintenance? I feel as if that is something that we don't often think about in terms of road safety, right? We tend to think about it purely in terms of behavior. But the whole point of the global plan is to look at it from multiple points of view, which is to say, to acknowledge that, yes, drivers play a role, but so to do road structures, which can also lead to things like this. You know, poor planning of junctions could explain careless exit or entries of junctions. You know, just all these different things enter the picture when we think about a plan that has to take into account all these different aspects. So that's what we wanted to focus on for this first part anyway. In the second half, we are going to be talking about road users, because let's face it, we are really not the best. We'd like to hear from you, though. I mean, what do you think could improve road safety here? And what is your biggest gripe when it comes to Malaysian drivers? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be joined by Professor Dr. Kulantayan Casey Mani, Executive Director of Safe Kids Malaysia at UPM and a co-organizer of the launch of the Global Plan here in Malaysia. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bruce Freddie Morrissey, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:13 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. Today we're talking about road safety and how we can improve that in Malaysia. Basically a conversation we've been having for 30 years that we will probably have for 30 years more. But we are speaking about it specifically because the Global Plan for Road Safety was recently launched by the WHO and United Nations. And that seemed as good a time as any to refocus on this. So we'd like to know, what do you think could help road safety here in Malaysia, and what is your biggest gripe when it comes to Malaysian drivers? That number to call, 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And for more on the plan, we are joined by Professor Dr. Kulantayan Casey Mani, Executive Director of Safe Kids Malaysia at UPM. He also co-organized the launch of the Global Plan in Malaysia last Thursday. Prof. Kulan, thank you so much for joining us.
Right, thanks.
So the plan itself aims to reduce road traffic deaths and injuries by at least 50% in the coming decade. How does it plan to achieve this?
Yeah, if you look at this plan, so they have set a target by 2030, we can reduce 50%. And they have break it up to three main pillars, which is the first thing is what to do. And the second one is how to do. And the third one, the most important, is who to do it. Okay. So once, since they have break it up to three main pillars, I think that's quite clear over here. And they are using a safe approach here, safe system approach. Safe system approach here, what it means over here is even in the event human beings do mistakes, okay, but that should not lead to fatality, because we should assume that human beings will do mistakes. So even if they do mistakes, that crash should not lead to fatality. Okay, that means the whole system should be safe for them. So that's the whole idea here. And also to make sure that we don't throw the blame completely on the end user, okay? But everyone has a responsibility here in terms of those system provider as well as the road user.
So how will countries around the world, like Malaysia, use this plan?
Okay, so the whole idea is the global plan is being developed and their intention is this should be followed suit by country plan. That means the country plan will be the specific strategy in order to help that particular country to achieve the global targets. Because each country will have a slightly different kind of scenarios. So if you look at Malaysia and any Asia countries which has high population of motorcycles, then the whole plan will be slightly different compared to any countries which does not have motorcycle as high population of vehicles.
So what are some of the main problems in Malaysia when it comes to road safety?
Okay, if you look at in terms of road safety, the first thing is we don't believe, as a road user, we don't believe we will be involved in a crash. That's the biggest challenge over here. Okay, we always think that if there is any safety messages out there, it is for others and not for us, and a crash will never happen to us. And we always like to use the word accident so that we don't blame ourselves if we were involved in an accident. Okay, and then we always said, oh, I accidentally hit him. Okay, today the day was not good. Okay, but no, what we are saying is, hey, look here, it's actually not accident, it's crash. That means something which is preventable. If we keep on using the word accident, then we can never prevent this, because we always say that it is by accident. So my first thing, my first message to everyone is, the whole issue is it is actually road crash, one. And second is it is preventable and we have a role towards preventing it.
So comparatively speaking then, does Malaysia have a high rate of road traffic injuries and fatalities?
Yes. For the amount of population, for the number of population that we have, our number of deaths and crashes are high. If we look at for the population of almost like 32 million that we have, we are recording in terms of number of crashes for last year was 418,237. Or if I want to make it very specific, it's every 75 seconds, we have one reported road crash. Okay, so I just want to caution here. This number looks very big, okay, but actually the problem is much, much bigger than that, because these numbers that I'm sharing to you was last year, year 2020, during pandemic. So just imagine, even during pandemic, if this is a number we are hitting during non-pandemic, okay, which was 2019, we were hitting close to 550,000 crashes. Okay, so that's one. Second is, not all crashes we report. The numbers that we are sharing to you are those reported ones. So if you add up with those numbers unreported, just imagine the magnitude of the problem. So therefore, this becomes a public health issue, and everyone has a role to play in order for us to manage this pandemic. I would call it as a traffic pandemic.
So you mentioned the safe system approach and how that's front and center. What needs to be done in Malaysia to put this approach in place over the next decade?
Okay, wonderful. Okay. So in terms of safe system approach, if we see for the coming decade, what we are hoping for is, since we are a country with high population of motorcycles, okay, so we hope and we request that based on their proportion, which is more than 50% of the fleets belongs to motorcycle, therefore, we should be having more motorcycle lanes for them, in order to make sure that their travel are safe. That's a key point. Because you can see, not only Malaysia, any country which has high number of motorcycle population will have high number of fatalities. Because that's the nature. Motorcycles' nature is they are 17 times more risky than a car because they are an exposed vehicle. Okay? There is no layer of protection for them. Unless if you're sitting inside a car, there is a layer of protection, one layer of protection. Over here, either your motorcycle, you're a bicycle, or you're a pedestrian. These three group are people who are seated outside the vehicle. Therefore, in any crash, the impact, you will get it immediately, you'll get it directly. So on that ground, our request for this coming decade, we have to give importance for motorcycle safety. So as and when, and as much as possible, we can provide motorcycle lane, that should be the way forward. That's one. For those car users, the message for the car users. The safety restraint system is there. Okay, so for an adult is these seatbelts. That's pretty much clear. But the challenge we have from the last decade, if we see, we have pretty much good usage in terms of seatbelt use among driver and front passenger, but we are not doing well in terms of rear passengers. So for this coming decade, we kindly request with everyone who are using cars, every passenger, every car occupant in the car has to be restrained, no matter whether where you sit. And rear passenger seats are very important, because if any rear passenger who are not restrained, what will happen is they will endanger themselves. That's one. But second is they will also endanger all the other occupants in the car. So even if a driver is belted, but because the rear passenger is not belted, now the rear passenger will move in front and create injury to the driver. On that ground, we request. That's one. Second is for the coming decade, we are looking forward for the child restraint system to come into force. Because once that comes into force, then only we can make sure that all children's travel will be safe. That's one. Second is, as and when the child are using the child restraint seat, we also have to make sure that the person sitting next to the child, who is an adult, also must be belted. Then only we can get full benefit from the child restraint system.
So, to get all of this done, who are the stakeholders that need to be involved? And would you say that they're currently on board with making these changes?
Okay, good. This is one good question. And this is being highlighted very clearly in the global plan as well, if you see under the category, who to do it. Under who to do it, for sure, it is a must. In every country, the government has to be involved. Okay, government has to be involved. But government only is not enough. Government only is not sufficient. So in the global plan, they have highlighted that private sector, which has large population of workforce and which has a large supply chain, okay, then they have a big role to play. Because if you have large population of workers and supply chain, that means you yourself are a kind of mini governments, okay, because you have a lot of workers within you. And all these workers are commuting. And if you look at in terms of occupational safety and health itself, the biggest portion of hazard for any commuting, for any workers is from commuting. So that's why private sector has to come into place. That's one. Second group is the civil society. Civil society has to come into play because this is a public health issue. On that ground, I would like to see in this decade for us to have a road crash victim association. We have not seen yet any road crash victim association. We need this association. One is for their voice to be heard. That's one. But second is for them to function as an ambassador in order to prevent any increase in these statistics. So that's what we are looking for as well. And the third one is in terms of funders. What we're looking in this new decade is funders here are not limited in terms of monetary only. What we're looking at, funders can also provide technical assistance based on their capacity. So if we start looking at that, then we have more people coming into place. Then the whole burden will be shouldered among everyone. Therefore, it's much more manageable. But having said that, we as road user has a very significant role to play in order to make sure that our travel is always safe at any point of time.
So what are some possible hurdles or challenges that you're anticipating?
Okay, the first thing is thinking that we won't be involved in a crash. That has to change, that mindset. That's one. Second is we should welcome traffic enforcement. Okay, we as a consumer should welcome. So therefore, when the traffic enforcement agency are implementing it, okay, we should actually thank them for implementing it because they are saving our life. Instead of, okay, either scolding them or cursing them or what, no. We should say thank you because they are saving our life. So once we keep on doing that, then I believe that traffic enforcement agencies also will feel appreciated that their work is being appreciated, and they will also be increasing in terms of the enforcement activities. Because traffic enforcement activities has to increase in order for us to reach the point where the probability of being detected if we violate any traffic rules has to be high. Then we will comply. That's one. The second mindset that I would like to request for a change within consumers is we should start complying traffic rules because we gain to benefit from that compared to in order to avoid a traffic summon. So that mindset has to change. So saying that, example is we should start wearing our seat belts or start asking our children to use child seat or even ask our children to use bicycle helmet even though there is no law. Because we are the one who is going to get the full benefit behind the safety product. Why are we using safety product just to fulfill the traffic regulation? So that mindset and culture has to change.
So will these changes require a huge cost? And is there enough political and financial will to get things going?
Good question. Of course, every time resources are not enough. Okay, can I? But if we can optimize it, that'd be great. So if we have more players, more stakeholders coming in, then we can optimize those resources. That's one. But there are some interventions where it is already in place, just that we have to actually really make it work. And to make it work, it's actually mainly it's on the end user. Let me give it to you very simple. The interventions which can give us really high benefits or high returns in terms of reduction in speed and using safety products. If we can make sure these two things we are able to do it, reduce our speed as much as possible and comply with the posted speed limit, that's one. And second is, if you are a motorcyclist, make sure you use a standard certified helmet. And if you are a car occupant, make sure you use the seatbelt and the child restraint seat. Once we do that itself, these three main interventions, this itself will give us huge return.
Prof, in closing, right, we've been talking a lot about road use, about road users. But of course, the other issue that comes up is the importance of public transport, right? That having accessible, convenient public transport, in essence, would mean there's less of a need to drive or use other personal means of transport, therefore fewer incidents or potential for crashes. I'm not going to say accidents. Where should we start in this respect?
Good. As much as if we can move people from private vehicle to public transport, that should be the way forward. There is two reasons behind it. If we look at even Malaysian statistics, crash statistics, or even global crash statistics, it is very clear. Public transport is the most safest mode of transport in comparison with any types of private vehicle. If I look at Malaysian statistics itself, we say you have almost 67% death due to motorcyclists, about 20% cars, and about 6% from pedestrians. These three groups, if you combine, will be more than 90% death. And along that range, if you see, the least contributor in terms of fatalities comes from bus driver and bus passengers. So that's very clear cut. So among public transport, if we, wherever we get an option to use a rail-based public transport, that's much, much more safer, okay? Followed by a road-based public transport, which is bus, and then only comes in your car. And finally, is your motorcycle. On based on that, if you see, even the global plan, when they mention in terms of what to do, they highlighted in terms of multimodal transport, because they are looking forward, okay, that, for example, you may drive your car, you may park in a railway station and then take the rail and then you will go to your final destination. So as much possible, we can use rail-based public transport. That should be the way forward.
Prof, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Welcome. Thanks to BFM as well.
That was Professor Dr. Kulandayan K. Simani, Executive Director of Safe Kids Malaysia at UPM, weighing in on the global plan for road safety. We've been asking you for your thoughts. How can we improve road safety in Malaysia? What is your biggest gripe about Malaysian drivers? A two-pronged approach today. Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. Today, we are focused on road safety with the launch of the Global Plan for Road Safety recently. And so we've been asking you essentially, what do we need to improve this when it comes to our country? And what is your biggest gripe about Malaysian drivers? Just a fun one for everyone to vent. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. The first part of our show really focused on the importance of a holistic approach, but the second part is going to look at us, the road users. Before we get there, though, we wanted to get to some of the messages because there are so many.
There's so many, I don't even know where to start. Let's start with this one from Kevin, who says, not really a gripe about Malaysian drivers. We are all too familiar, but a concern about how bright certain digital advertisement boards are at night. It's almost blinding to the oncoming driver. Very dangerous. And, you know, Kevin, I think that's a great example of how, about something our guest was talking about earlier, that it isn't always about the end user. And certainly I'm one of those people who gets extremely distracted, especially with flashing bright lights on digital advertisement boards.
Yes, and I don't think that horror movies should be allowed to advertise on those. And I genuinely mean that.
No, I know what you mean when they suddenly like pop into view just as you're about to take a turn. Very dangerous.
Yes, and when they do, and I mean, I understand because it's advertising, you want to take full advantage of what you have, but good Lord, it really brightens the living daylights out of me. And as you would expect from this, we have a whole host of people saying, including D, Apik Panda, and Lok, all saying turn signals. Lok saying not using their signal lights. Apik Panda specifically saying when changing lanes or exiting and entering roundabouts. And D's simply saying new cars also signal sudah rosak.
That just reminds me of a friend who told me that I, in fact, shouldn't indicate with a signal when I'm switching lanes because people won't give me the space to switch. It's an example of how bad behavior just breeds bad behavior because everyone just acts as if no one's going to drive well. We have Munif who says bus and lorry drivers must understand that there are a dozen Fast and Furious movies already. If they are not starring in one by now, they definitely won't ever be. So stop auditioning for a role alongside Dominic Toretto on the road. Stay on the left lane where you belong.
Speaking of scaring the living daylight, honestly, when you have a bus or a lorry or just a large vehicle swaying out into your lane or taking turns next to you at high speed, the fear for your life that comes in, right, is just so, so immense. Last one, I think, before we get to our guest, we have Tash who says they should issue some sort of cert of acknowledgement for drivers who can text and drive without causing accidents. I loathe these drivers. When I honk them, they have the gall to give me a what's your problem problem look like I'm the unreasonable party. Don't get me going on those who don't know the meaning of the yellow box and bahu jalan or road shoulder. Also, we need to use a proper reflective yellow paint for our roads. I can't see anything when I drive at night because the road lights are rarely lit and then are on during the day.
Yep, a whole host of things there. Yes, I completely agree with the yellow paint, reflective yellow paint at night. I have a lot of problems knowing where the lines between the lanes are, or where where a yellow box is, and so on. Yeah, this makes me both like feel like I have solidarity, but also angry.
I know, right? And you can't see the reflective lights on the road. Then before you know it, you come up against one of those huge turn signs that are at the corner. And I'm like, I needed warning well before this moment. But yeah, we're talking today about road safety. We want to know what you think could help to improve that in Malaysia, but also what are your biggest gripes about Malaysian drivers or Malaysian roads? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now to talk about this issue of changing lanes and signalling and texting and driving and just all the things that we do. We're crossing over to Dr. Ahmad Azad Abdul Rashid, Chief Research Officer at the Malaysian Institute of Road Safety Research. Dr. Azad, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi, thanks.
So I wanted to start with a perhaps deceptively simple question. Are Malaysian drivers worse than most? You know, how do we quantify good or bad driving?
Let's try to work on the definition here. Philosophically, you can't say somebody is bad or good driver. We're talking about something relative here. Safer or less safer? No? You understand what I'm saying. So, but before we go for that, there is a baseline where everybody has to at least reach that standard to be on the road safely. Yeah. So first, we're talking about fit to drive. We have to be fit physically and mentally and also emotionally. That's one. Secondly, and then we have to be competent. You know, we need to know how to move the car, maneuver safely, change lane, that are all those things, including giving signals, like you mentioned. Yeah. So, if you say that whether we are worse or not, if you compare internationally, in terms of the outcome of road safety, we are not the worst. Yeah. But having said that, with an average 20 deaths per day, we still have a very big gap to close.
So as our messages indicated, right, if you take a drive on any Malaysian road, within about 5 minutes, you'll see any number of violations. You might see people using their phones, illegal U-turns, not signalling, switching lanes, all of these things. How have these habits become a part of, or just become normal on our roads?
Yeah, we talk about norms here. Norms is involved, culture. So sadly, some of these bad things has invaded our culture. If you're talking about why it happened, it is a collective responsibility. We're talking about culture here. Everybody has a role to play. Yeah. Having said that, we still have to we can change this. It may take generations, but if you don't start now, so yeah, it won't even start it. Yeah. So yeah.
So with that in mind then, why is it actually so hard to address bad driving behavior and create actual change? Because the truth is, like we said, we all know what it looks like. And yet I think many of us are still guilty of doing it anyway when we ourselves hit the roads.
Yeah, actually, it's not hard, you know, at personal level. It's not hard. We know what we need to do, you know. Before driving, we know that we need to be fit. Go into the car, buckle up, start your engine, and then do all the routines. We do. We know that. It's not hard. It's just that we don't do it. Why? Okay. Road users, we are human. So human beings are very dynamic. We respond to various stimuli outside, internally as well. But if we look at that personal level, we do know what we need to do. But at macro level, actually, I do notice the driving scenario is changing in Malaysia. I had experience living in the country for 3 years, and then when I came back, I felt the change. we have hope still. Okay. But if you're talking about why it's very hard, like I said, it's a multifactorial. At the personal level, we do know, but we are human. We tend to find shortcuts. Yeah. So having said that, that's why the philosophy of road safety now, we are talking about safe system approach. Everybody has their role to play. The driver themselves, the passengers, the mom, the dad. Hey, son, please be careful. We want you to come back live, for example. You know, that makes a difference. So everybody has to play their role.
So these problematic habits often accumulate over time. How can we prevent this from happening?
Okay. We are talking about prevention here. Okay, now, historically, we are talking about road safety. The direction was trying to prevent crash, total, absolute zero, yeah? And they were really focusing on how to change the behavior of driving. But that didn't happen because we are not robots. We have gaps, yeah? So now we are talking about how do we prevent it. Coming back to safe system approach, now the direction is we would try to minimize crash as much effort as possible. But if that happened, we don't want to have it lead to fatality or serious injury. Yeah, if you are talking about a more immediate, I would say countermeasure to change this, we are talking about enforcement here. But we have to be mindful. Enforcement is costly and it's not sustainable. Yeah? Enforcement has is proven to be effective in behavioral change. Let's look at our highway, for example. We are talking about the speed camera, yeah? We can see everybody become angel at that stretch, you know? But no, at least for that stretch, the behavior change. It is effective, but it is costly. We can't afford to have it everywhere. You know, we can't afford to have all the policemen to sit beside the at the roadside and do everything. Yeah, so everything has got to be collective.
Speaking of that, do we need to overhaul how we teach people to drive? Because, you know, it obviously starts there.
Yeah, if you ask me, actually, it's not, that's not the starting point. The starting point is from the baby, from when they are still small. You know, there are two types of road user. First is the passive road user, and the second is the active road user. Active road users, I define it as somebody who actively controlling their vehicle, you know, the drivers basically, yeah? But for passive road users, they are still road users, but they are passengers, for example. So if you want to change this, change the culture, change the value, we have to start from this new generation, okay? So that's why the government is putting forward all this child restraint system, trying to make it as a habit for the kids, at least when they are inside the car, buckle up. That's actually the very first rule. So starting point is actually from there. But as we move along, we have programs in school, road safety education. It's happening now. So our students has been exposed to road safety, depends on their level and and where the content changes. But whatever they learn at school, if it's not reinforced back in home or in the society, then the effect is not effective, not optimal as what we expected.
We're speaking today with Dr. Ahmad Azad Abdul Rashid, Chief Research Officer at the Malaysian Institute of Road Safety Research, or MIRAS. After this, we're going to continue our conversation about looking at road behaviours here in Malaysia in light of the Global Plan for Road Safety that was just launched. Keep your thoughts coming and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:52 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. And we have been talking today about road safety here in Malaysia and spending the second half of our show focused on the way in which road users play a part in all of that and how it is that we can address the behaviors, sometimes bad, sometimes problematic, that we see on our roads. So we have been speaking today with Dr. Ahmad Azad Abdul Rashid, Chief Research Officer at the Malaysian Institute of Road Safety Research. Dr. Azad, thanks for staying on with us. So I have a side question. This is just a personal observation, a personal curiosity. Has driving worsened over the course of the lockdowns? Because I think so, but I'm curious what an expert thinks.
We have the data. The data is showing us in 2020, the number of fatality reduced. Yeah. So in during the total lockdown, the less vehicle on the road, and that give opportunity for people to go at higher speed. So that is one argument, which think that maybe we are seeing something worse here. But on the other hand, because of reduction of vehicles on the road, that means the chance of getting involved is also low. So sorry to say that the data shows that total lockdown actually helps us in saving life.
So... overall, what kind of interventions have been proven to work when it comes to addressing bad behavior on the roads?
Proven to work, like I mentioned just now, enforcement proven to work, but it is costly, it's not sustainable, and so there are a lot of other issues. Yeah, so that's why research has shown that if we are going for education, we need that. That is because that is more sustainable, but that has got to be supported by other things as well, including enforcement. And that, if I'm not mistaken, double or triple the effectiveness compared to just having education only. Yeah. Furthermore, now with latest technology, that also helps in changing behavior. We're seeing a lot of, assisting technology, for example. In Europe, they are already embarked on what we call intelligent speed assist technology, or ISA. Actually, we have that, but we just don't realize it. If you use one of those navigation apps on your phone to move around, if you go beyond speed limit, it will mark or it will show you something different color, something like that. Yeah. But ISA in Europe, they are more, I would say, more active, more intrusive. Yeah, so they produce this annoying sound until you slow down your car. So they are, those are certain examples of a technology that is showing, proven to reduce, to change behavior.
Are you optimistic that the introduction of this global road safety plan will have an impact here in Malaysia?
Well, I don't want to make any forecast here, yeah. But here is my response. I think my response is conditional. Yeah, this is the starting of the decade. We are we're starting fresh now. We are starting new. I think it is a good time for us to reflect what has happened. Yeah, together we can make a difference at personal level, at family level, and also at the community level. We also has to be more proactive and spread the knowledge, understand why this is happening so that we know how to respond, not emotionally, emotionally.
Do you have a final message for us?
Be considerate. That's the first one. Be considerate. You know, what I do for myself when I entered my vehicle, start the engine, and then I tell to myself that, you know, I'm driving now, I want to be there safely, and I think that driving is an consider driving as an opportunity to make good things, you know, to say, excuse me, I'm changing lane here, by giving signal, for example, you know. And then if somebody waiting to merge to your lane, just allow them instead of compete with them, you know. And then when you do all those good things, pat on your shoulder, feel good. I did something good today. So consider driving as opportunity to be good people, and then you will behave. Thank you.
Dr. Azad, thank you so much for joining us. That was Dr. Ahmad Azad Abdul Rashid, Chief Research Officer at MIRAS, the Malaysian Institute of Road Safety Research, talking about how it is that we use our roads. And that's really what we've been asking you for the entirety of this hour. What are your issues with road safety? What are your issues with Malaysian drivers? And we have so many messages.
Let's see. We have an anonymous listener who says, there's one word that sums up what bugs me about Malaysian motorists, and that is selfishness. Their disregard for the existing undang-undang and other road users. If we can change this attitude, there'd be a lot of improvement. The authorities should review the road and traffic system. Stop springing surprises with closing roads without warning. Junctions shouldn't have four directions, stop, look, go signs, which put the onus on motorists to figure out who should be making the first move. Schedule routine checks on road conditions and traffic signs or traffic lights to ensure everything is functioning properly. Sometimes it feels as if the road traffic system is not in sync with town planning.
Oh, I'm so angry. just listening to those messages, that message makes me so mad. All those things, absolutely, you're right. A lot of points about enforcement coming in, which I think we'll save for later on, but I just wanted to read this from Alvin, who says, I was listening and realized I wasn't wearing my seatbelt. Alvin, thank you for your honesty. And then says, all for enforcing stricter rules. This is a good initiative. Perhaps even stricter tests to get a license is needed. The amount of accidents I saw from cars crashing with absolutely no car close by right after the MCO was relaxed was way too high. Keep those thoughts coming. We're talking today about road safety here in Malaysia in light of the Global Road Safety Plan just being launched. If you'd like to weigh in, how can we improve road safety? What are your issues? What are your biggest issues with Malaysian drivers? Send them our way. Keep it here on Inside Story BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.